This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations we want to have. The conversations we need to have.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Hello, how are you? Are you recovering from an early start today? Are you a heartbroken England supporter or a joyous Argentina fan? What do you think today's match says about either country and their football legacies? In particular, what does it say about the great Lionel Messi? Later in this hour, I'm going to be speaking to The Conversation Hour's World Cup pundit, Ed Wyatt, who says, if Argentina wins, Messi should be crowned the best of all time. Now, what do you think of that statement? Isn't he already? Or how does that stack up against Pelé, Ronaldo, Maradona, of course? Tell me what you think. We are celebrating Messi, of course, and Argentina. Have you been there? Are you Argentinian? Tell me the best part of the country. Maybe you visited there and they won your hearts. What was it? Tell me about this win, what it means for you. Tell me all of your stories about Argentina. Maybe one positive thing about getting there also is that you don't have to travel through the Middle East to get there. Are you worried if you're planning or if you've booked a trip either to or through the Middle East? Should you be worried at the moment? Just recently, the Australian government toughened up its language in the latest travel advice for travel and transit through the UAE and Qatar. And of course, we know so many Australians use those hubs to travel to Europe. That's what we're used to. What does it mean if you've booked your ticket already? You saw the on and off again nature of this war. It seemed safe at the time. What does it mean for you now? And especially if you are planning, stick around. We will dig into that for you. Also today, a friend of mine has written a piece for The Age today, and this is its headline, and I agree with it. You tell me what you think. This nation's coffee myth must be confronted. It's overrated and it's $6 a cup, overpriced. Now, I completely agree. I am here to take your sprays, 1300 222 774. I completely agree that what we are paying for isn't just overpriced, and we've talked about the price of coffee before, but it's just not even good. And we're going to be talking about why we've got ourselves into this myth, why we're thinking that. Do you agree or disagree? 1300 222 774. He's going to say, look, he's part Italian. He's going to say the Italian coffee is far superior and, of course, far cheaper as well. I'd love to get your thoughts. 1300 222 774. Are we deluded about our coffee? What is great about Argentina? But next, should we be booking tickets through the Middle East?
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
We will be talking about travel advice through the Middle East and also later this hour, 1300 222 774 for any questions about how to prepare your garden for spring. That is coming up, and we do want to get to your questions and calls about that. Anything that you might be preparing in your garden, maybe you've got some tips as well. Also, I'm asking you, Lionel Messi, is he not already the best of all time? Chris from Frankston, you have a thought. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
What do you think?
Well, because of my age, I'm in my 60s, I think Messi's the third greatest player of all time, behind Pelé and George Best.
Okay. All right. Pelé, George Best. As you say, you might be showing your fine vintage there. You think people are just getting carried away with this World Cup?
Younger people are. People have never heard of Pelé or George Best.
In your mind, why? What are the things that make them stand apart?
They were just such a level at their time above any other player on the planet. And Messi's very, very good. But for me, he's just not quite up there with those two.
Chris, I hear a bit of an accent. Are you a little bit biased today?
I'm very sad, yes.
Heartbreaking game, wasn't it?
I'll be supporting Spain, put it that way.
Chris, thank you. Lovely to hear from you. Tell me what you think. Is Lionel Messi now, must he be crowned the best of all time? We're going to be hearing that. Ed White's going to defend that point of view. He says only if Argentina wins. What's that about? 1300 222 774. Also, I'm asking you today, we just got our heads in the clouds when it comes to coffee. Are we really that good? I say no. Stephen in Limestone, what do you think?
Oh, we've just had 6 weeks in Europe. We've been through Liechtenstein, Italy, Sweden and Switzerland, and we had our first good coffee when we got back to Melbourne Airport. I mean, you've got to realise the culture over there is espresso. So you order a latte, they give you a little thing of espresso and a thing of milk. They have no real concept, and the rest of it comes out of machines.
Okay, Stephen, I'm going to interrupt you because, as I say, I've got skin in this game. Are you saying the only real coffee is coffee with milk?
No, of course I'm not. I'm saying that our coffee culture, though, largely is built around probably the latte and cappuccino and that. Our friends are Italian. I'm just getting used to espressos. I really enjoy that. But to say that our coffee culture is overrated, I disagree completely.
All right, Stephen, you have put your vote in. Do you agree with Stephen? Do you agree with me? As I say, coming up, we will be talking about this. How did we get to this point where we've convinced ourselves, well, Stephen's convinced as well, that we've got the best coffee? We are talking about coffee across the world. We do this because we're great travellers. But if you have got a ticket that takes you through the Middle East at the moment, you might be thinking, how is that going to work? This war in the Middle East is on and off. We've got just somewhat tougher language around the Australian government's advice to us when it comes to the Middle East. The previous advice said there remains a risk of military action. This new advice says military strikes and reprisal attacks have occurred in a number of locations in the Middle East in recent days, including directed towards targets in the UAE and Qatar. It still is at the revisit if you need to travel level of warning, but when and how does that change? Joining me now is Craig Platt, who's digital editor of Traveller at The Age. Thanks for joining us, Craig.
Yeah, no problem. And let me just begin by saying this is why I drink tea, because we don't
to avoid these debates. To avoid the fights.
Yeah.
That's a very good idea. I will also ask you about the best thing about Argentina, because I know you've travelled there as well. But let's start off on this. I know quite a few people who are, you know, as Australians do, planning their travel. We go through the Middle East quite a bit. What do we make of the new toughened language around travelling either to or through the Middle East? Would we or should we transit through the Middle East as it stands right now?
Yeah, look, it's pretty tricky, isn't it? The federal government's smart traveller website, I mean, as you mentioned, they haven't upgraded the warning to do not travel. Generally speaking, they tend to be fairly conservative with the way they rank countries. So you might be surprised to learn that a lot of countries are on the second level, which is the high degree of caution level, which you used to kind of think was mainly applied to developing countries or more dangerous countries. But these days, that level applies to the UK, it applies to France, it applies to, you know, a whole bunch of places across Europe that you would generally consider fairly safe. So they do tend to be pretty conservative. So the fact that they haven't quite gone up back to the do not travel level would indicate that they feel, I wouldn't say comfortable with people flying through those destinations, but they don't think it's, at least at the stage yet, where they consider it particularly dangerous.
I beg your pardon, Craig. I was just going to say, in terms of what you have seen when it comes to the changing of the level of advice to Australian travellers, is it fair to say that it's easier for the Australian government that they take a long time to push up that alarm level, and it takes a long time for it to come down? And in which case, what does trigger that next alarm? How many more strikes in Iran does it take for Australians to be told not to go through the Middle East?
Yeah, look, that's a good question. And to be honest, I think there's an element of politics that comes into play here. So I think they probably did take a little bit too long to bring in the do not travel warning when the conflict first kicked off. And Yeah, like I say, I think there's an element of politics because, for example, even though France has exercised a high degree of caution and the UK has exercised a high degree of caution, the US is just considered normal precautions, despite, you know, what you risks around crime, risks around gun violence, all those sorts of things. But they don't, they keep the US on a green level, and I do wonder whether there's an element of fear of retaliation against warning US tourists not to come to Australia as a result of that. So, look, I would think that as soon as there's a strike, or if any strike occurs on an airport, then they're going to go back to do not travel. The moment, there's only been... my understanding is anyway, it's thus far there's only been strikes on military targets, which wasn't happening earlier in the conflict. And that's kind of the key difference. And I think if they start targeting civilian conflicts, then you'll see that ranking go up. And the knock-on effect for that is if it's on do not travel, that can void your travel insurance. So, or at least while if you're transiting through there and something happens, you won't be covered for that.
You're listening to Craig Platt, who is digital editor of Traveller at The Age. We are talking about what we should be looking out for, what we should be thinking if we're planning to travel or transit through the Middle East. We are great travellers. Rob from Trailgun has just got back from Argentina. We're celebrating Argentina as well today. Hi, Rob. What was it like there?
It was great. We loved Argentina. We went to, I think there were six countries in South America, but a group of like 36 of us travelled over there.
Oh, wow.
We played a veterans cricket. So the company we go with is Exotic Cricket Tour. So they've been playing cricket over there since 1880, would you believe? But
We are connected with Argentina through rugby union as well. So did you feel a sort of sense of home, I guess, by bonding through cricket? What was so good about Argentina?
Look, the red meat, the beef was absolutely superb, and the fruit and veg had a lot more flavour than what we've got here in Australia. That was really good.
Wow.
We went to a soccer game, the River Plate side, where ACDC play when they tour there. And they're very passionate people. They were singing an hour before the game, all the way through the game and after the game, even though they lost. It was amazing. 86,000 people there. Yeah.
So you were going for them this morning, Rob?
Yeah, I was actually. Don't tell my English friends.
I won't if you won't. Rob, thank you. Tell me what you celebrate about Argentina as well. We will be talking about that, whether Lionel Messi really can be crowned right now the best of all time. That's been thrown out there today. We are talking also about whether when we travel the world, whether we still think we've got the best coffee. I think that's an illusion. But going back to Craig Platt, who is, of course, a great traveller, being digital editor of Traveller at The Age, we're talking about travelling through the Middle East. And Craig's been saying that, look, at the moment, we're still at a recommended see if you need to travel through there. Craig, for people who've already got their tickets and are just praying that nothing does happen, that they don't strike those military targets, as you were saying, what relief have you seen in the travel agent industry through insurers, through travel agents? Has it changed? Has it gotten better over these past few months if things do happen along the way?
No, not really. Not on that side of things. I mean, insurers are always going to do whatever it takes to protect them. So what you often see are clauses in a lot of policies, and it's always worth looking at the product disclosure statements that you get with your insurance. You will see things that often they will specifically say, we do not cover, force majeure, acts of God. So that can include earthquakes and things like that. But they generally specifically say they will not cover acts of war. So if a war breaks out in an area you're in, travel insurers usually have this get-out clause, basically to say we won't cover you for that. So what has happened, and also I should point out, it doesn't matter if war's declared or not. The travel insurance companies decide for themselves whether war's been declared or not. But what has happened recently is Emirates, because obviously United Arab Emirates and Qatar are really suffering through this because the airlines are such a big part of, you know, their industry and tourism. They've really, you know, switched across to being tourism becoming a huge industry for them. I mean, they're really struggling. So one thing Emirates has done is introduce its own travel insurance policy that does cover you for conflict, which you can purchase. At the moment, however, they've introduced it. It was only introduced a couple of weeks ago, I think. At the moment, it's only available to 27 people from 27 countries. And for some reason, Australia is not on that list yet.
That's a bold decision.
Yeah, I do wonder if there's perhaps some administrative issues around it for Australia, because New Zealand is on the list. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But the other thing it's worth thinking about is, you know, if you were going to book with one of these airlines to fly through there, is getting a flexible ticket so you can get a refund on it. And they are kind of giving you these incentives to get refunds, booking tickets that are fully refundable, because then if you do that, you can sort of have that flight there, but then maybe look at having a backup plan at a different flight. I've certainly heard stories of travellers who had booked their flights through the Middle East and then ended up getting a full refund and booking another route to Europe and actually saving several hundred dollars because their alternative route ended up being cheaper than the flight they'd booked through.
Right.
And that's actually, weirdly enough, it's still the case that flying through the Middle East right now is not the cheapest option to Europe.
Right.
The cheapest option is still, and has been for a while, is to fly through China. So if you fly with a Chinese airline, you're generally going to find fares several hundred dollars cheaper than what you'll get through Etihad or Emirates or Qatar now.
Oh, that's interesting. So through China or flexible tickets is still the ongoing advice. Before I let you go, Craig, have you been to Argentina? Tell me about your impressions.
I have been. I'm no expert. I've only been there, I think I might have been there twice, but I've only spent one night in Buenos Aires, so didn't get to see much of that at all. The kind of areas I've explored in Argentina have been sort of Patagonia, and I've been up to Iguazu Falls, which of course sits on the border of Argentina and Brazil. Mm. There's the Brazilian side and the Argentinian side, and I would say there's arguments, you know, which side is better, just as there is at Niagara Falls in Canada and the US. I do think the Argentinian side's better because you get much closer to the falls. The Brazilian side gives you a good sort of overview of those falls, but the Argentinian side, you get the spray in your face if you go on that side. So that's really good. And there's some amazing stuff down in Patagonia, the Perito Moreno Glacier, which is this incredibly huge glacier that you can actually... You can see it really well just from kind of the viewing platforms they have there, but you can actually go and do trips and walk on it, which is quite phenomenal.
Oh, that's a blind spot in my travel history, Craig. Thank you for that tip, and thank you for explaining a little bit more about the travel warnings today.
No problem.
That's Craig Platt. He is digital editor of Traveller at The Age. We are talking about Argentina. We are talking about coffee as well. We are talking about Lionel Messi. We are going to be speaking later to someone who says, look, if Argentina wins the World Cup, then Lionel Messi will be said to be the greatest of all time. Grant in Croydon, what do you think?
Hello. Yeah, just on Messi, I would say he is the smartest player I've ever seen. The way he just jogs around, because if the World Game is all about moments and he understands that, so he jogs around until this could be my moment. Then he goes into, you know, full gear, and he's very, very dangerous. Plus, I wanted to mention that the corner kicks, his are the most dangerous I've ever noticed, because, all of his corners threaten the goal and set up the opportunity.
Just so consistent.
Yeah, and then if I could also go on coffee, if I can.
Oh, please.
Yeah, well, this struck me the other day, being a retired person, that I can sit down and pay, drink out of a coffee mug and sit in their shop or cafe for half an hour and pay the same price as a takeaway. So what we should be doing as far as the price goes is reduce your takeaway and maybe increase the in-house coffees.
Increase, so because you're sitting there? I do know that's what they do in some parts of UK and Europe. That's, yeah. But do you think it's any good, Grant? What we're discussing today is Melbourne. Are we fooling ourselves? Is Australian coffee really that good? I say no.
Well, okay. I would say it is good because in particular Melbourne, but Australia in general, is we're known for coffee. We're known for good coffee. If you don't serve good coffee, you'll be out of business.
Okay.
You're forced to make a good brew.
All right, Grant, you're saying because we believe it, it has to be true. Graham in St Kilda, do you agree with Grant?
Absolutely. I lived overseas for 23 years based out of Hong Kong and my boss was in New York. So I used to pretty much travel 3 weeks out of four, go to all the major cities around the world. And I would always look forward to come home to Melbourne to get a coffee. Okay. And consistently, Melbourne has good coffee. And look, sure, you'll get the odd good coffee overseas. And even in New York, you'd have, there was a coffee shop near the office and they actually had a sign in the window, Melbourne Barista, which was pretty amazing. But yeah, Melbourne, sure, consistently, fantastic coffee.
Okay. All right. Graham, like Grant, thinks that Melbourne coffee is the best. So many of you believe that Lionel Messi is the best. It's going to be a controversial conversation hour coming up because I'm going to be speaking to someone who agrees with me that we are just fooling ourselves when it comes to coffee. Stick around for that. Also, we will be discussing Lionel Messi. And if you don't know who he is, and even though he's up there being talked about as one of the greatest of all time, we're going to get a little bit of a cheats sheet ahead of the final. And also, we're talking about how to prepare our garden for spring. 1300 222 774, if you want to hop on the lines already. If you do have any questions, we're going to have some advice for you to what to do in the garden. But coming up next, is our coffee really all that good?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Not here. Think about me every night. Oh, is it that sweet I guess so? Say you can't sleep, baby, I know. Does that mean it's the soul? Pull it up down.
Well, that's Sabrina Carpenter getting pretty happy about her espresso. Is she in Melbourne? I don't think so. Joining me now is a friend of mine, James Paniki, who has written a piece in The Age. He is a Melbourne journalist and he has taken on his own city. He's got some Italian heritage, so that's the credibility I am also hiding behind. James is here to just make his case for why we are fooling ourselves in Melbourne and in Australia when it comes to coffee. James, thanks for kicking off this conversation, and you're a brave man.
Yes, I am extremely brave. I'm guessing that there'll be a lot of pushback from listeners, but I'm on your side. I don't think coffee is particularly good in Melbourne or in Australia. And what worries me the most is the fact that I think that this is really just a marketing strategy. It's the sort of the coffee industry that wants it to be good. It keeps on telling us that it's good. And as a result, we're lapping up all of the talking points from anyone selling coffee.
Right. So you're saying we're all a bit of a hive mind. You're saying we're picking up talking points from the cafe industry. You also blame it on, let's face it, the arrogance of Melburnians. Go there.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is coming from someone who is a Melburnian, so I say it with great humility. But no, I just hate the kind of the industry that's built up around it. The fact that you get these condescending baristas who, you know, treat it as an art form rather than simply just making the coffee. I think they all need to chill out, and we need to ask ourselves, why is it that the coffee that we're serving, it's okay, but it could be so much better. And look, the example that I made in this column that I wrote for The Age is that when I go to Italy, I've still got family in Italy, we usually land at Pisa Airport, which is, you know, on the, what is it, the central coast of Tuscany. and you just get out, and they serve you the local cafe at the Pisa airport.
Mm-hmm.
Serves you coffee and these little sort of paper cups. And it's fantastic. It is just great. It's got none of the problems that we have in Australia, which is that it's too sort of it's too strong, it's too burnt, the taste is overwhelming. It is just sort of light and almost sweet. You don't need to put sugar in it because it tastes great.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it? How hard can it be for us to get that right? I mean, how hard can it be? The Italians have worked it out for whatever reason. How hard can it be for us to get that right?
Oh, you're singing my kind of song here, James Paniki. But do you agree with us? 1300 222 774. Yep, I reckon one of the best coffees in my life cost a euro as I was going through Trastevere a few years ago. Still remember it. Cameron from Footscray, what do you think? Hello?
Hi. It's Cameron from Footscray.
Yeah, what do you think about our coffee? Are we fooling ourselves, Cameron?
Yeah, we're fooling ourselves.
Okay.
I agree with you, Isley. You can get a good, and the previous caller, you can be up the tiniest little road to the grungiest little service station in the middle of nowhere in Isley and get a fantastic coffee. Melbourne, yes, has good coffee, but it has terrible coffee as well. And Australians, per head of population, drink the most instant coffee in the world.
Yeah, so what are you saying that casts aspersions on our ability to figure out what a good coffee is?
Okay. Indeed.
Oh, well, that's a whole different debate, Cameron. Thank you. We might get some instant coffee lovers calling us up. One question from me to you, Cameron, which I'll put to James. Is it all about espresso drinkers
versus... ABC Radio Melbourne.
Cameron, you're telling everyone you're on? Yes. Is it all about having milk in your coffee, Cameron, do you think? Oh, I think Cameron might be off in another conversation about coffee. James, do you think it's all about espresso drinkers versus people who have it with milk?
I'm not too sure. I mean, Italians obviously don't drink anything with milk after sort of 11:30 in the morning, and they sort of frown upon anyone ordering, a cappuccino in the afternoon, and that's their thing. I don't necessarily feel that way. I don't think there should be any sort of cultural divisions between people who drink espressos or lattes, but I just feel it's the taste of the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue that others have brought up is the price of the coffee. Mm-hmm. I just don't see that there's any reason why you can justify paying $6 for a cup of coffee. The Italians, as your listener was saying, the Italians, you know, you can get an espresso for €1. You can get, a cappuccino for close to €2. So, I mean, we're talking about a maximum of, three Australian dollars. How is it possible that they can do it so cheaply? I mean, one of the reasons is surely the fact that the Italians just drink more of it. They drink more of it
because it's cheaper, potentially.
Yeah, but it's the economy of scale, right? I mean, if you get every Italian going to a coffee shop three times a day for a coffee, and they can do that because the coffee doesn't leave that bitter taste in your mouth. It's light and almost sweet. You can do that. I mean, we're being discouraged from drinking coffee because it costs so much. I mean, it's just prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
How can you justify $6 for a cup of coffee? I just don't know.
Well, if you have an answer for James, 1300 222 774, so many texts and some calls. Mark from Paran, what do you think?
Oh, hi. Look, I agree entirely. I invest in a very good machine, without saying it, but it's a 20 bar La Pavoni.
Oh.
And I've had it for many, many years, and I use a fantastic mild Italian commercial blend from the Illy brothers in Turin, and it produces that mild coffee, an espresso ristretto, no sugar required.
So it's about the beans, potentially, Mark.
Well, Italians tend to prefer these milder beans, which then produce a coffee which is less bitter, and so, no sugar required. Or a classic for me would be a Corretto, which is an espresso with, say, some grappa, which comes from my Veneto neck of the woods, or you can put something like that, a Sambuca in it instead of the sugar. Just put a corrected coffee.
Corrected coffee.
It starts with the mild Italian beans. That's my thoughts.
That's your thoughts, and you obviously carry a fair bit of Italian cred with you. I was expecting more pushback. I'm getting some pushback, but not as much as I was expecting on text. Lee in Inverloch, what do you think about this competition that's become between Italy and Melbourne?
Yeah, look, I was just saying before, I travelled in Italy for 4 weeks at the end of last year, around northern Italy mainly, and look, we're pretty serious coffee drinkers at home. We've got a good machine. We buy good beans. We grind it for every cup. And look, we were really, overall, really disappointed with our coffees in Italy.
Right. Why?
Yeah, they were either weak or too strong or bitter, or, you know, they were just not great. Now, I know you can you can get very bad coffee in Australia too. And, you know, probably Melbourne's better than my local area. I hate to say, I hope no one from Inverloch.
In Inverloch? Well, yeah. or maybe you're just used to the Melbourne taste, Lee. Oh. Thank you. You have got a vote for Melbourne and Pam in Port Melbourne. Do you agree with Lee?
I actually do. We've just come back, like Lee, 4 weeks travelling in Italy, and I found the coffee very bitter. Mm. And I'm wondering, is it because they tend to use robusta beans, whereas the Melbourne palate is perhaps more the smoother Arabica bean?
Well, isn't that interesting, Pam? Because James and my experience is the complete opposite. So maybe it's just where you go.
I think it's palate too. I think it's the Melbourne palate versus the Italian palate.
Pam, that's really interesting. Thank you so much for your call. James, we have to wrap it up there, but essentially you're backing your palate, are you?
Yeah, yes, I certainly am, and I'm proud that I brought so much controversy to our daily routine of drinking coffee. Hopefully I can do something as outrageous again next time, and I'll speak to you then.
Exactly. Every time you pick a fight, I'll have you on the Conversation Hour. James Panicki, thank you so much for joining me today.
See you, Mary. Thanks, bye.
That's James Panicki, who's a Melbourne journalist and who has written that piece. If you'd like to read it in The Age, it's well argued and it's funny as well. It is The Conversation Hour, even if it is controversial, on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. We will be talking about whether Lionel Messi is undoubtedly the best of all time. That's what my guest is going to say. What do you think? But also, jump on the lines, 1300 222 774. We haven't got long, but this is your chance to talk about how to prepare your garden for spring.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
1300 222 774. What are you doing in your garden to prepare for spring, or do you have questions? Greg Moore is Senior Research Associate at the University of Melbourne and also Chair of the Significant Committee at the National Trust, and joins me now. Hi, Greg.
G'day, Mary. Good morning to the listeners.
It is halfway through July, but you're talking about spring. I love that. Why is now the time to be thinking about spring?
Well, winter's a great time of the year, I think. It's can be a bit brisk, but you're out there rugged up and your garden looks completely different. Things have slowed down and you can see things in your garden now that you won't see in spring or summer or autumn, for that matter. So it allows you to see the garden with new eyes and to do certain things that get things really right for a good spring.
1300 222 774, if you have any questions for Greg, now is the time to get on the line. Greg, what are the most important things we should be looking out for?
Well, one of the things I'll be doing and have been doing is getting into the garden, getting up close and seeing how my mulch is going. I'm a great believer in mulch, as the listeners would know, and I want to make sure that it's at the right depth, 75 to 100 millimetres, and the right spread. And I know that over the summer and spring, it breaks down very rapidly, so even people like me who are conscious of mulch can easily find spots where there's not enough or there's not any. So it's a great time.
So you're talking directly to me, because my idea of mulching is just watching the leaves fall from the trees and just seeing where they go.
Yeah, well, that's a great way of mulching too. But just having followed from autumn, you've got all that free mulch. So if your leaf litter is in really good nick you know, free from pests and diseases, for example, then make the most of it, because you can really do well with that mulch. Mix it with your other mulch and it really gets your depth right. So it's a really sensible thing to do. And the other thing you can do, of course, is you see your deciduous trees, perhaps for the first time in months. They've been cloaked in a lovely verdant green, but now you can go out, you can see the structure, you can see, are there any dead branches, are there bits falling down that you need to deal with, any splits or cracks, and you might even just prune them for a better shape.
So this is the time for pruning?
Yes. Usually I'd recommend pruning sometime late July, August. It's been so warm that it might be a little bit later this year, but no, you can certainly get out there now. And if you are out there, you can also have a look at your trees and see if there's any of those lichen growing on the branches and on the trunks of the trees that you might have missed.
So they're the little spotty bits that can be white or yellow, look a bit white. Like moss.
Yes, very much so. White, yellow, orange, green, wonderful kaleidoscope of colours. And you often don't notice them because of all the other foliage and vegetation. So they come into their own at this time of the year. And if you've got good ones growing on your trunks and the like, that tells you that your air quality is really well up there, because they're very sensitive to any pollutants in the air.
So lichens are a good thing to see?
Oh, absolutely. And most people, I think, do love them. You know, some of them are absolutely spectacular. For example, if you've got some ash trees, old ash trees growing around, they'll be looking pretty sort of grey at the moment, but the lichen on them will be a bright orange. It's almost like an amber sign saying, you know, watch this, things are going to happen.
1300 222 774. If you've got any questions or observations about what you're doing to prep your garden for spring, we think of it as the middle of winter according to one calendar. Someone is saying, of course, under the Boonwurrung six seasons, it's early spring starting soon, and that's where we'll see wattle starting to bloom. 1300 222 774. I'm speaking with Greg Moore, who is, of course, one of our resident gardening experts, who is telling us all about it. We're looking at the branches of the trees that we haven't been able to see before. Greg, what else are we looking for when we're looking at our foliage? What are the things that should maybe be the bad signs that we should be looking for?
So if you've got leaves on your, say, fruit trees or on your roses, for example, and some of those leaves will be held for longer, they might have spots on them. The black spot is an obvious one. Sometimes they're brown spots, sometimes a bit red as well. And those infected leaves tend to hang on. If you're looking at apples, for example, you might have codling moth that are still present. Get rid of those old leaves as part of your hygiene, because you don't want them hanging around, and particularly if it's a mild winter, as it's shaping up to be, if you don't want to give the pests and diseases a head start when things start to sort of happen in spring. So just getting on top of that hygiene. And if you are pruning off leaves that look a bit sus because they're, you know, starting to go mouldy or they're covered in mildew, just make sure you keep your gardening tools clean. And you can easily clean them with a bit of metho or a 10% household bleach. You don't need a lot of it, just to keep them nice and clean so that you're not spreading stuff around as you're intending to clean up.
This from Claire in West Gippsland, Greg. I've been told not to prune an apricot in winter. Is that true?
Yes. So with some of the fruit trees, it's much better to prune a little bit later, because if you prune them now, they're fully dormant and you often get resin produced, and they don't really respond to the pruning until later. So yes, she's been told correctly, wait a little while with those apricots.
And just as a last question from me, Greg, interesting what you say about this changing weather that we've got. Are all of your bits of advice changing in terms of that? Some of the things that we would normally do in winter, do we just wait a bit till it gets a bit colder?
Look, we're watching this very closely, because it's not here, so this is not necessarily climate change, but it could be part of it. And we are conscious of the fact that it's been very mild. And so things that you might have done a little bit earlier or a little bit later, you might put back. So at the moment, I haven't pruned my roses, for example, because some of them are still flowering. They've still got some new growth on them. So I'm going to wait probably another 4 to 5 weeks. So we are very conscious of checking the natural cycle of things. And essentially, the plants tell you when you should be doing something. And at the moment, they're saying to me, it's been very mild, wait another week or two.
And just one last text, someone who's saying that actually they've seen the cold weather and they're wanting to prepare the compost for spring planting. So how do you get it to break down so it's ready in October rather than December? What would you have to say about the timing of compost at the moment?
Okay, so what happens with compost, and it depends where you are in the state, compost will break down regularly if it's moist, not too hot or not too cold, and you've got plenty of oxygen. So at this time of the year, if you can have your compost where it's exposed to some sun and it gets warmer, you'll get a much more rapid breakdown. Yeah. You do need to make sure that it stays moist, and you should get really good composting at the moment because the breakdown is still taking place because of the warm conditions.
Greg, thank you so much for joining us today. Always great to get your tips.
Thank you, Mary. Good luck to the listeners and happy winter gardening.
And happy winter gardening to you too. That's Greg Moore, who's Senior Research Associate at the University of Melbourne, Chair of the Significant Tree Committee at the National Trust. Of course, you've got more time to garden this weekend because those World Cup matches are stopping. We're just waiting for the final. We're going to be talking about what happened this morning with our resident World Cup pundit, who is going to be talking about why he says that if Argentina wins, Lionel Messi is undoubtedly the greatest of all time.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
And Argentina, the world champions, are going to the 2026 final.
That was the sound this morning. Of course, Argentina is through to the final against Spain. And of course, it's sparking a whole heap of commentary about how good this Argentinian team is and about how good, of course, Lionel Messi is. Joining me now is Ed Wyatt, who is an American-Australian sports journalist who has said, put his neck out. He said, look, let me ask him, what has he put? Ed Wyatt, what do you think that this says about Lionel Messi and his place in world football? Hi, Ed.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the debate's normally between Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, and some of the older folks would throw Pelé, of course, the great Brazilian who won three World Cups in there. But I think if Messi isn't there already, if he wins the World Cup again, Argentina go back-to-back, something that hasn't been done since, I think, 58 and 62, maybe, that was Brazil. I just don't see how you can deny him. You know, he's won 8 Ballon d'Or awards as the best footballer in the world. And he's really elevated this team, which I'm not actually, as weird as this sounds, I don't know if it's their best team, but he's just been incredible. He 2 assists today in that win over England. He just has a way of getting things done. The players love him. They rise to the occasion for him. I just think it's, I don't really think I'm going out on a limb saying that, but I just think I think this is something special. I really do.
Okay, well, Ed Wyatt has said it. Messi being the greatest. Do you think? What do you think? 1300 222 774. Ed, I can tell you that already we had this morning that it's Pelé, then George Best, then Messi. I can see some other people voting for Best as well. I'm also intrigued in this idea that you say if they win, that will then cement his role. And that's what you're talking about because it will have been about his role in this team to essentially get them there.
Yeah, exactly. To go back to back, that's the thing at the moment. And look, George Best, a phenomenal player, but played for Northern Ireland, so really never had the chance to really display things on the world stage. He had some off-field issues as well that kind of curtailed his career. But a wonderful player, Pelé, of course. Maradona, of course, the Argentinian or Argentine, however you want to say it. He won 1 World Cup. He also had his off-field issues, and I think that's something if you bring that in or not. Messi certainly hasn't had any issue there. I'll be honest with you, Mary. I don't love comparing eras. I think it's very difficult to compare
a Pelé
to a Messi or a Ronaldo. It's just very, very different. But I just think if he goes back-to-back with this team, I just think it's going to be really hard to make an argument against him personally.
It is hard to do, but this is what we do, Ed. And I'm asking people, what do they think? Compare across eras. Knock yourself out. 1300 222 774 is the number to call if you'd like to take on Ed. I've already picked a fight about coffee this morning, Ed, so I'm just going to keep going. And also, we just thought it would be worth, just ahead of this final, for the people who are, they're thinking, okay, I've missed every game, but I'm going to get up for that final because I want to hear all about it. We'll get to like the other big names who are going to be out there, but just for people who need a bit of a cheat sheet on Messi, if they haven't been absorbing all of the, you know, media about it over the past several weeks or dare I say years, how would you sum up the narrative of his story? There's a lot to back about this character in world football, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, he's I think, 39 years old. So he's still out there running around. And Ronaldo's 40 or 41. So it's pretty remarkable what both those guys can do. Messi's small. He's like 5'7", I think, in the old standard. I think that's, I'm not sure. I'm really bad at my metric measurements.
I think we all know that, yeah.
I've lived here 20 years and I'm really bad at it. But he's not a big guy. He picks his moments. He kind of, you know, a lot of times people accuse him of walking around, like not being as involved as a lot of other players, but he just kind of picks his moment. He's very, very clever about what he does. He's tougher than people think. He's got a very low center of gravity, so it's hard to knock off his feet. He makes some incredible runs. His feet are very quick, and he's fantastic on free kicks. So if you see, they call it a set piece, obviously, where you stop and you take that free kick, he's brilliant at that, again, as is Ronaldo. But I just think he's one of those players when people say you don't have to be big and strong and massive to play this game. He's the perfect example of that. A guy who's 5'7", kind of looks normal, if you know what I'm saying, compared to some of these, someone like Victor Wembanyama in the NBA, for example.
Well, in fact, that's part of his story that I find really compelling, that he had a growth hormone deficiency that he had to overcome.
Yeah.
Most famously, only the Spanish could afford to give him that treatment. Imagine what would happen if he didn't go there.
It's so true, isn't it? And of course, overlooked a lot of times because he was too small when he was the younger age. Yeah, you'll never make it, that sort of thing. So it's a great story that way. And of course, now he's playing in Major League Soccer in Miami. So he's sort of helping boost that league up as well. And he's copped some criticism for that. People saying, you know, you're playing in a league that's not that good and all that. Well, you know, I don't think it matters if you win another World Cup, to be honest with you.
Brian says still votes for Pele, then Messi, then Maradona. Discounts George Best because of his off-field activities. Simon from Bacchus Marsh says, didn't do anything in the latest match. Messi, very overrated. Oh, harsh,
two assists?
Simon.
I don't know. Two assists on a game-winning goal.
Exactly. So we should probably look at the other team that's going to be on the field there. Ed,
Spain.
Tell who are the players overall then on the pitch who the finals are really going to be focusing on?
Yeah, look, Spain has a really deep team. And the thing that I find most amazing about Spain is they've arguably got three of the top, say, 10 goalkeepers in the world, but only one can play. Doesn't play this guy, Unai Simon. He's been there forever. David Raya, the backup, who was the Arsenal goalie, was arguably the best goalie in the world last year, but he doesn't get a minute because they've got Unai Simon running it. So, but they've just got a stack of players that can come in and get things done. I mean, they literally have two teams, really, that they can run. A guy named Mikel Merino, who also plays for Arsenal, has come off the bench and scored game-winning goals in the last two games. So they've got all these guys that contribute. And, of course, the main one is Yamin Lamal, the youngster, who is just incredibly electric. If you haven't seen him play, he's absolutely worth watching. Just a real exciting young talent, maybe the next world superstar. So he's definitely worth watching. Interestingly, they've only played a competitive match once. They've played a lot of friendlies and games that didn't really count. Back in the 1966 World Cup, they played, and I think Argentina won it 2-1. But yeah, they don't really have a record of playing each other in competitive matches, which makes it even more intriguing, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, the I can imagine what it will be like off the field with Argentina versus Spain. Apart from anything else, it's going to be great food, that final.
Yes, absolutely.
Phil from Elwood, who's your vote for the greatest player?
I will go with Messi, but I think Haaland, the very tall, blonde Norwegian who plays for the Premier League, if you have a look at his stats, he got his first 100 goals. Far less in number of matches and at a much younger age than Messi and also Ronaldo.
Yeah, okay.
So I think he'd be my first pick.
Okay, what do you think about that, Ed?
I think his comment about Haaland is fascinating. He's been, I think, from an American standpoint, the real sort of face of this World Cup because the big, tall, blonde, long-haired Viking who, scored goals. Norway had that rowing the boat celebration.
Oh, didn't you love those fans? He'd be going for them just for that.
Phenomenal. And also Haaland, like, he's done some very funny stuff on social media. He was seen, I don't know if you saw him on the plane, getting off the plane with that raccoon.
With the tequila bottle.
Exactly.
Makes me think that he had a good end to the World Cup in some ways anyway. Thank you, Phil.
So.
Good vote. Michael in Castlemaine, you have the final vote. Who do you think?
Well, I'm one of the five people on the planet that don't understand the attraction of soccer, so I wouldn't know what anyone looks like. So my yardstick is who I would recognise. So it's got to be Pelé.
Okay, that's fair enough. Pelé.
I wouldn't know Messi if I fell over him.
And don't fall over him. He's worth
a
lot of money.
You get a red card if you fell over.
Absolutely. Michael, I agree. I saw Pelé once from the back of a press conference in my life and he just oozed charisma. Absolutely fantastic. Ed, I want to catch up with you if we possibly can after the final, but thank you so much for giving us a heads up today.
Anytime. Happy to help.